Hey, it's Daniel Tardy. Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. Did you know that the lessons taught by Dave in this podcast are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? Join us at our next event to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum in person. This is a special edition at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, May 5th through the 11th. To get more details or to register, give us a call at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223. Or check out the Master Series event at entreleadership.com.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is a place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we're covering part two of Dave Ramsey's time management lesson. Now, if you didn't hear it, go back and look for the time management episode with author Peter Bregman. That is the part one of the time lesson, the time management lesson. Today, we have an interview with author and speaker Rory Vaden about his New York Times best-selling book, Take the Stairs. Now, last episode, we shared a lesson about casting the vision and talked to the authors of the book, One Word. One Word That Will Change Your Life. Those authors were Jimmy Page and Dan Britton. Today's podcast lesson is about time management. Dave shares the four quadrant he uses to prioritize his time. So here is Dave Ramsey with time management.
Stephen Covey talks about in the book, Principle-Centered Leadership. He says that we have four areas that we do time with. We have things in quadrant one that are important and urgent. Now, almost all human beings do a fair amount of quadrant one. We kind of get that. That's pretty basic. It has to be done, and it has to be done now. If we don't collect the receivable, payroll doesn't happen on Friday. We get that. You know, revenue problems have to be addressed quickly. There's not enough margin in most places. So we get that. We get the necessity things. We know the item has to be shipped. If it's not to the client on time, they're going to send it back and we're going to get, you know, we got another revenue problem and we got a collections problem and we got an accounting problem. So we've got to make sure that things are urgent, things are important. I mean, if we had gotten this wonderful printing in these books that you're writing in right here, if we had gotten the printing delivered next week, it would have been no value. We needed it for this week. It's urgent, it's important. It's one of Heather's things on Heather Brett, who's managing all this process. You know, it's one of her 97 million things on her to-do list for this event. And believe me, you see all the different little things you have laying around. This checklist is enormous. And so it's the necessity to do that. We get that. Most of you are pretty good. Most people are pretty good at quadrant one. Most people pretty well can identify, and mostly, if they're going to be successful, stay out of quadrant four. Things that are not important and not urgent. We kind of know what those things are. It's watching a movie on HBO that you have seen six times. I don't know why I do that. It's not even relaxing because it means if I'm watching it, they're blowing something up or shooting somebody. So why is it relaxing? It's not relaxing. It's not even entertaining. I know every line. I mean, how many times have you seen Beverly Hills Cop? I mean, really? Back when Eddie Murphy was skinny and young, you know? I mean, really? Yeah, you know, just, you don't... Why do I do that? And I don't do much of it, but occasionally I just sit down and I go, and I forget to throw a brick through my TV. You know, the scary thing is a whole lot of America spends most of their life doing that. At least when I do it, I go, that was really dumb. I feel like I've got an entertainment hangover now. You know, something I shouldn't have done. There's 2 hours of my life I'll never get back, you know? And so you know these things. Those two areas really aren't the problem areas. We know the necessity things, the urgent and important. We know the not important and not urgent. The problem and the opportunity areas are the other two quadrants. Things in quadrant three that are urgent but not important. These are things you have to stop doing. And everything in our culture is urgent. We have such a high level of communication, such a high level of connectivity, that the sense that we need to respond to the urgent has to be fought. You have to not respond to the urgent. Urgent does not mean important. Urgent does not mean important. Urgent does not mean important. You've really got to get that into your system and into your spirit to where you start going, wait a minute, stop. And you just kind of breathe for a second and you go, not right now. And you move to the next thing. And I grew up, as I told you last night, in a real estate person's, I told you again this morning, a real estate person's household. Mom and Dad were in the residential real estate business. And so they got in the business in 1966. I was 6 years old. And to help you with that, for those of you that are young, that means the telephone in our home had a cord that connected it. It was black, and you dialed it. Okay? Now, it wasn't one of those like Green Acres phones, but it was a black rotary phone, right? And there was no such thing as answering machines. There was no such thing as voicemail. There was no such thing as touch tone phones. That all happened in our area in the 70s. So mom and dad were in the business. They used to run newspaper ads in the newspaper. That's back when people read the newspaper. And they ran newspaper ads and classifieds to sell houses. So when the phone rang at our house, it was money. Someone calling to buy a home, list a home, which is how our family ate. And to say that my parents were hardcore about answering the phone with proper etiquette is the understatement of the century. So when I'm 6 years old, I can answer the phone and interact with you as if I'm 35. It really wasn't optional. They would wail on us. I mean, really, we had to learn to do this right. And so it's yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, sir. No, sir. Okay, thank you, sir. I understand. Mom and dad have stepped away from the phone right now. I'll have them contact you as soon as they return. And let me repeat the phone number back to you. It's 832-2878. Is that correct? Yes, sir. Thank you. And let me repeat back. You're calling about the home at 123 Main Street. And I would be able to fill out a little carbon message things so they'd have the phone message when they got back. And if we didn't do that, and then they would call back and go, your teenager is so polite. He's six. You know, I guess that's where that some of that stuff came from. I mean, because it really wasn't optional. There was, you know, either the phone rang and nobody answered it, or we answered it. And if we'd answered the phone and said, yeah, huh, there would have been bruises involved. That would not be good. You know, really, it was not optional. So to this day, drilled into my DNA, a spiritual scar, if you will, is a ringing phone. If your phone rings right now, you better make sure your cell phone's off, because if it rings, I'll come answer it. A phone has to be answered. Y'all know what I'm saying? It has to be answered. So when that's why I tell people our receptionist, her title is Director of First Impressions, and if she doesn't answer the phone in two rings, I'm down there going, what's up? Because after two rings, somebody's not home. Three rings in our world is an eternity. Three rings and a business didn't answer? Or you drop into one of those, God forbid, those recorded things where you get lost in the labyrinth, you know, and you can't get out. You feel like you're dealing with the federal government. No. This is our opportunity to serve and be real humans. And people are calling us are hurting. And so we got to answer the phone and we got to be cheerful. And you may be smiling. It changes the shape of your vocal cords. You got to do this whole thing different. It's not optional. So when the phone rings, it's like, right? But I still had this revelation a few years ago. Fast forward, I mean, to the 90s, right? Phones are no longer connected by a cord. You can walk around and hand them to people in other parts of the house. They're all over the house. There's voicemail. There's recording devices if we wanted to put them on in addition to voicemail. There's all these other things. You can forward. You can do all these other things. And I've got two teenage daughters at that point and a wife who's social. I'm totally not social. I already told you that. And email was coming in. And so most people who contact me with email, even at home to this day. And so I figured out one day that the phone ringing in my personal home is 100% of the time not for me. It's never for me. So if I answer it, now I've got to deal with it. Little Bobby called. He wants you to call him back. Little Bobby, you'll just have to call back. She doesn't call boys. It works the other way. Or some six women call one morning because my wife runs with this herd at the Y. They've got the little running herd. And the running herd's going to cancel, and they all have to call each other. And I'm taking notes. There's yellow pads, sticky things. And I finally just realized, it's never for me. I had this revelation. The answering the phone is urgent at my home, but it's not important. It's never for me. I'm doing something important like playing solitaire or free cell. Don't bother me. It's never. Besides that, I'll get the number wrong. Voicemail will catch it. It's never for me. I can look at caller ID and I'm assured it wasn't for me. I have no idea who that is. I'm not answering the phone. So I'll be sitting there at the computer and the phone's ringing right beside me. My wife's cooking. She says, answer that. I said, no, it's not for me. If I answer it, I got to pick it up and bring it over there to you. Just come over and get it and answer it. It's for you anyway. You know? Or worse than that, they're in the other end of the house somewhere and I'm looking for them. Hey, phone for you. It's never for me. If you want the phone, answer it. It's not for me. So isn't that funny? Email's the same way, isn't it? I mean, if I get one more email about Obama's birth certificate, I'm going to blow something up. I'm so sick of you people. Really. I mean, honestly. And George Bush is not the cause of all evil on the planet. Stop it. Really. Quit sending me this crap. You conspiracy theorist. Unbelievable. I got stuff to do. I'm actually trying to work over here. You know? I got this one friend who's sick and she put us in her prayer chain and I'm praying for her. That's fine. But don't send me 87,000 emails. You know, sorry, I have just stuff to do here. You know, and ding, 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 ding. I already get 90 to 200 emails a day that I want. Don't add to that. All of your stuff. These jokes that you know, here's the thing. Check Snopes. Most of it's a lie. Really. Don't send me this crap. You see what I'm saying? Anybody else frustrated like I am about this? You know, so really, seriously. So it's deception. It's not important. I have stuff. I use this email for effectiveness and for time management. And so I have to just delete, delete, delete. Finally, I go over to the IT guys and I go, I don't know how you do this, but whatever you do, do your magic. Keep these people out of my life. Block this, you know? And then it just never gets through again. Thank God, you know? So you just got to find those things. So those things that are not important and they're urgent. And here's some things. You got to remember this too. Some things are important enough. They need to be addressed, but just not by you. You hear people come in your office and they go, we have a problem. No, we don't. You do. Go fix it. I'm doing something else here. That's why we pay you. Right? And you know, you just got to reset their minds on stuff because they want to suck you into all the drama of whatever's going on. No way. Quadrant 2, leadership. Most valuable quadrant on here. It's actually more valuable than quadrant 1. Actually. It's things that are not urgent, but they're important. Stuff like you're doing today. Stuff like, by the way, did you know exercise is always a quad two thing? It never seems urgent. It's always important. Going to church. You know, going to your house of worship. Right? It never seems important, but it's important. Doing your will. Doing your strategic planning. Doing your annual budgets. Setting your goals. Attending something like this. These are all things that are not urgent, but they're important and they're life-changing because they reset your life and they keep your life on course or in the direction you're wanting to go. So always be looking to see where the stuff falls within those quadrants. Do the urgent and the important. Do the not urgent and important quadrant two stuff. Delegate the urgent and not important. Leave with your drama. Go fix that yourself. Delegate or discard the not urgent and not important. The daily to-do list is the best method of short-term time management. So we've gone from dream to vision to goal to now the daily, hourly, moment-by-moment activity that is causing the goal to be hit, that is causing us to execute our vision, which allows us to live our dreams. There's a progression here. If you leave out one of those processes in there, one of those steps in your mindset and how you're teaching this stuff, you end up working on just the how and not the why. Your to-do list should flow from your career mission statement, from your dreams, from your goals. Studies have shown that 15 minutes every morning spent on your to-do list will gain you an average of 2 hours a day in productivity. That is a lie. For those of you in here, you're not that unproductive. You don't have 2 hours of non-productive time. But you have people on your team that do. If they'll sit down and plan their day 15 minutes every morning, their productivity will go through the roof. Now, those, again, you're in here, you've gone past that years ago. You've seen these lessons. Some of you could teach this stuff. Some of you have taught this stuff. But that's not the point. The point is we've got to do it. And you've got to make sure your team's doing it. A wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment.
Well, hopefully coming out of that lesson there, you have a greater understanding of the importance of managing your time. And doing it by quadrant changes so much. So many people hear this and like, oh my gosh, are you asking me to do another thing? That's another thing I got to put in place. Oh, it's more work. The truth is, you are losing time. You are wasting time. There's so much time lost in your day by not understanding how your time should be managed. By not putting them in the quadrants. By not understanding what is important and urgent. By not understanding what's not important but shows up as urgent. The sooner you understand these, the sooner you come to a place of knowing, oh, if I can move some of this junk out, I can focus on the things that I need to be focused on. That changes your day and it gives you time back. So, switching gears. Today's interview is with Rory Vaden, New York Times best-selling author. He is a self-disciplined strategist whose insights have been shared on Oprah Radio and featured in print media such as Success Magazine. In addition to being an author, speaker, and entrepreneur, and by the way, world-class speaker, took second place, I believe, in Toastmasters in the world, did an incredible job. Rory is leading a rapidly growing international social movement called the Taking the Stairs World Tour, in which he is raising money for charity by climbing the 10 tallest buildings in the world. And to him, I say congratulations, because he can do that. I'm going to applaud him from here. So please welcome to the show, Rory Vaden. Rory, it is so good to have you on, man.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
I've got to say, I love the book. As I was going through the book, when I read the title, Take the Stairs, I thought probably the same thing most people think. Uh-huh. Oh, crud. This is going to be another one of those hard books to get through, because it's going to be asking me to do something that I'm not sure of. Mm-hmm. Getting through the book, I was like, my gosh, this is powerful. This explains, and there's a lot of stuff that I was glad to see. Hey, I'm doing this. These are sure. things that has made me successful along the way. So I love that. I also love the way that you started out the book. You started out by saying, we almost never finish the things we start, at least not if they aren't convenient or comprehensively entertaining, which is so true. In fact, there's a great chance you won't finish this book. Tell me a couple of things. One, tell me, why did you decide to write this book? And what have you discovered in that process? Like that opening section of people don't finish stuff. I'm assuming that's a huge part of it. So tell us why you decided to write this.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a long time in the making, and I've always been infatuated with success. I'd tell the story about I was raised by a single mom in this really small town called Frederick, and my mom sold Mary Kay Cosmetics. And, you know, so I grew up raised by women who were always teaching me about the principles of success and
cosmetics.
I know more about makeup than I do about cars.
<That's right. laughs>
But I've always had that curiosity, and, you know, as I've been out in the world and started a couple businesses now, and we've worked in the last 6 years with about 5,000, over 5,500 different sales teams around the country. And as I tried to wrap my mind around what is the thing that all these successful people have in common, and it's amazing because it doesn't matter what industry a person is in, how old they are, what their ethnicity is, their background, you know, who their parents were, where they grew up. It's just like the only thing that every single successful person has in common, when you sit down and you really talk to them, they will tell you this story about how they had to do all of these things that they didn't want to do to get started and to get going. And, you know, so it really comes down to self-discipline. And, you know, then one day I've been talking about discipline for, you know, a long time now as a speaker, and one day I'm walking along in the airport with a buddy of mine, and he knew I'd been talking about discipline, and we're walking along, and I got on the escalator, and he goes, "Oh, Mr. Discipline, you know, can't even take the stairs." You know, after I smacked him, I realized the power of what he said, Chris, and I was like, "Wow, take the stairs, take the stairs." What a great metaphor,
right?
For, you know, the things. You know, you would probably agree, and I know Dave would say this, that, you know, success is often not about these huge, grandiose decisions. It's about these small, seemingly insignificant, nearly invisible choices that we make every single day, like, you know, choosing between the escalator and the stairs. So take the stairs. That's how we got to it.
I love it. It's one of those things that so many people don't get. They don't understand it. They want to be great. They want to be successful. I know when I was going through getting out of debt, I mean, it was one of those things where I said, okay, this is it. I'm going to work every waking hour I possibly can and bust it until I can get done. And I would have people look at me, and they, you know, friends would come over and they'd be like, "Oh, you poor guy." You're having to do so much. And I'm like, oh, you poor person, you're still going to be in debt. Hey, you say in the book that there is a huge cost to living in a shortcut society, which we have absolutely become. Explain what that means.
Yeah, so here's the way that this works. It's just like what you're talking about. You know, everybody on the journey to success, me included, we all have this, we live in a fantasy land a lot of times that, you know, I'm going to win American Idol and suddenly everything's going to be great. Or if I'm trying to get out of debt, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I need some big money-making scheme or some quick business, a way to make a quick buck, and that'll save me. Or, you know, I'm starting my career and, you know, the CEO is going to walk by and I'm going to be rescued. And what happens, what we don't realize is we start looking for these shortcuts, and we're programmed to, you know, with marketing, it's always the magic pill, the secret potion, the hidden formula. And as I've set out to really discover, and at Southwestern Consulting, you know, we do this collectively where we're interviewing these ultra performers, trying to understand how do they think differently. And one of the key ways that these people think differently is with something called the paradox principle. It says that easy short-term choices lead to difficult long-term consequences. Meanwhile, difficult short-term choices lead to easy long-term consequences. So the great irony here, the great paradox, is that in all different areas of our life, whether it's getting out of debt or getting into shape or saving our marriage or starting our business, when we look for the shortcuts, we start to do the easy things in the short term. It actually makes life much more difficult in the long run. All of the indulgences that we engage in, they don't help us get there faster. They make it longer. And so procrastination and indulgence are really nothing more than creditors that charge you interest.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That is a tweetable moment right there.
Yeah. Yeah, tweet me.
There you go. You've discovered how successful people get to be successful. You've got a bunch of things, obviously working hard, obviously self-discipline, but you've got some specific things that you've discovered. How do successful people become successful, and what separates them from the unsuccessful?
Yeah, I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right, that we're all listening.
Yeah.
And if you listen to 12 different podcasts, you probably would get 12 different answers.
Yes.
But, you know, for me, I think the fundamental thing that is irrefutable that every single person that's been successful has in common is self-discipline. And they have, it's not that they like self-discipline more than the rest of us. It's not that they were born with it. I mean, many of the wealthiest people in the world were at one time, you know, bankrupt. I mean, Dave is a classic example of that, right? And many of the world's most in-shape people were at one time not so in shape. So it's not that they are born with it. What it is, though, is that they learn to think differently about discipline. In other words, their brain processes choices based upon a different set of criteria from most people's brains. And when they're faced with a choice, any decision, you know, success all comes down to how we make our choices, their brain makes a different set of calculations from the average person, and that enables them to choose a path that is different from other people, i.e. take the stairs. And so when we were putting together Take the Stairs, it was all about identifying these seven different ways of thinking, these seven misconceptions almost that people have about self-discipline. And, you know, we really found that self-discipline, it's not about an increase in your motivation, it's more about a shift in your mindset. And as leaders, as entree leaders, I think, you know, one of the biggest things we have, and I got this from a great, an amazing coaching client of ours. His name is Steve Adams, and he works for one of our sister companies at Southwestern called Tom James. It's the largest custom clothier in the world. And Steve told me, he said, you know, Rory, as a leader, my main job is to influence how people think. Mm. It's to influence their thinking. And that is so congruent with what we found and what seems to be true. And every time I sit down with somebody like you, it's that they learn to think differently, and that enables them to do differently, and then ultimately they get to have different results.
I think that's the funny thing is we have become the shortcut society. We watch TV. We watch, Biggest Loser, and we think, oh my gosh, the only way that I'm going to do this is I've got to have somebody screaming at me, you know, screaming my head off, And then I'll do it because they're yelling at me. And the truth is, and you know this, I coach tons of leaders. And the thing that I found is there are some personality styles that can take that, but most can't. Most just need to hear that it's a different decision-making process. I love that the shift in mindset, like you said. If you can just walk them through that point, to that point where they go, oh, there is a different way. That absolutely changes the way that they start to work.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, I wonder, it's an unfortunate statistic about Biggest Loser. Most of the people on that show return back to the way, once they leave the show, they return back to what they've always done. And the big difference...
It wasn't their self-discipline.
It wasn't... In order to have a permanent change in our action, we have to have a permanent change in our thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And while those shows are great because they change the people's behaviors and actions, they don't change the person's thinking. And I think action really, really is powerful and overcoming fear and all that. But to have that permanent change, you really have to change someone's thinking. And you know, so that's what the take the stairs methodology is about, trying to get behind that into the real psyche.
Absolutely. Like we said, the take the stairs is a metaphor. It's a metaphor of how we should live life. You mentioned a story, dude, and I was dying for you. But you mentioned a story of when you were a kid that led up to what you ask your readers to do, and that is to commit to the ridiculous. Share the story and why that is so vital of a concept to this book.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, I had this horrible habit, Chris. I would just leave the door unlocked. You know, it was my mom, when I was real young, it was my mom and my brother and me, and I was always the last one to leave the house. And I would always leave the door unlocked, and my mom would be like, "Rory, you have to lock the door. Seriously, it's a big deal." You know, we're living in trailer parks and apartments all around Boulder, Colorado area, is kind of where I grew up. And then, you know, I would say, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and so I'd fix it. And then my brother would come home one day, and he'd be like, "Rory, seriously, you left the door unlocked." And I'm, "Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry." And my mom was like, "Something, you know, this stuff happens. People rob your house." And then one day it totally happened. I came home and I was the last one to leave, but I was the first one back. And I opened the door, Chris, and the house had been completely ransacked. I mean, just the couch was flipped over, all of the electronics were gone, the house was a mess. And you know, I start freaking out, right? My heart's beating and I don't know what to do, and so I run next door. My brother was at his friend's house just like a few blocks down, and we call my mom, and my mom comes over, and you know, she walks up to me, and I'm just like, "Mom, I don't know what to do. I left the door unlocked, and somebody robbed the house," and I'm crying. I'm looking at her, and immediately, like, I look up at her, and her expression changes, and she has this weird smile, and right at that moment, a truck pulls around the corner with all of our electronics, all of our furniture, all of our stuff, all the clothes and everything. And I figured out, I was like, "I know who robbed us. We had been robbed by my mother."
My mom.
My mom. She came home at lunch, found the door unlocked, robbed the house, and I was terrified and I was so mad. But you know, I learned my lesson, and now I never leave without locking the door. And the reason that's so important is commitment is something that people, they don't understand, and one of the principles is in the book is called the buy-in principle of commitment, and it says the more we have invested into something, the less likely we are to let it fail. So when we have invested time and energy and emotion and prayer and love and money into something, we're less likely to let it fail. But most people don't. Most of us keep our commitments conditionally. We keep our commitments as long as they are convenient to do so. And the moment it becomes inconvenient to keep our commitment, then, you know, we tend to rationalize our way out, or we don't pay attention. We start to make mistakes. We start to question our circumstance, thinking that it would be easier at some other job, or if I had some other spouse, or some other situation. And in those moments, people who typically break their commitments in search of something easier, they're not champions looking for a new set of challenges. They're victims looking for a new set of circumstances. And for us, the strategy there is that we have to intentionally create the question, how? How can I do this? How do I pull this off? How do I get this lesson across? Rather than accidentally relenting to the question should. You know, should I do this? Should I stay? Should I go? Should I not? Should I do this myself? You know, what should I do? It's just, you start asking, how do we pull this off? How do we save this marriage? How do we launch this business? How do we hit that target? How do we get out of debt?
I love it. That is so powerful. Gosh, I love that line. Now, what is the rent axiom?
Yeah, this is a key point, and of course, I don't know if you picked this up from the book, but I sold with Southwestern Advantage, and mm-hmm. Southwestern's based right in Nashville. I sold for 5 summers, door to door, knocked on 20,000 doors, and never thought I would be a door to door salesperson. I was in accounting as an undergrad, and I never thought I would grow up to go door to door. I was a perfectly normal child. I wanted to sell Mary Kay.
as all young boys do, sure, of course.
As all young boys do. And one of the things they taught us at Southwestern, I've sort of taken and modified and adapted and really made really championed this because we've seen it to be true now at Southwestern Consulting. It's called the rent axiom, and it just says this: success is never owned. Success is only rented. And the rent is due every day. Success is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every day. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the biggest loser people and the people who hit the lottery and people who, you know, have these short spurts of success that they don't sustain them because the key element is they're missing this insight of that success is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every day. And it doesn't matter how successful you've been or how unsuccessful you've been, who you were yesterday has little to do with who you have to be today. And, you know, I love the rent axiom because if you take out this word success and you put in for it anything that matters in your life, you know, financial security is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every single day. You know, being in great physical health is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every day, and the rent is paid by these choices we make. A fulfilling spiritual relationship is never owned, it's rented, the rent is due every day. A happy marriage is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every single day. Now, the rent is higher for some of you than others on that last one, depending on who you married. but we have to realize that the changes that we are making in our life and a take the stairs mindset, it's not about some short-term burst of success. It's not a temporary change. It's a permanent change. And ironically, when we embrace this idea that success is never owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every day, something magical starts to happen, and our appetites begin to change. And the things that were once very hard to let go of, the indulgences, whether it was food or some addiction or some thing that we were attracted to, that we later become the things that aren't even a temptation, because it's just like our appetite for food can change, so does our appetite for choices and success and discipline, and also even the physical things. You know, when it was the things that were once hard to get our bodies to do, you know, getting up and running and working out and doing those things, later become the very things that your body craves, and it's because we have a new set of actions that are reinforced by this permanent change in your thinking that we at Southwestern would refer to as the rent axiom.
Oh. There's so much. We're just scratching the surface on a 20-minute interview on this. There's so much that we're missing that's in the book. But I love the metaphors. I love the stories that you use. One of them, I think, can totally hit home with so many of these leaders and entrepreneurs that are listening today. One of them is the buffalo mentality. Share that story.
Yeah, well, I mentioned earlier I grew up in Colorado. I live in Nashville now. My wife and I just moved there. But in Colorado is one of the only places in the world that has both buffalo and cows. And there's a great lesson for leaders to be learned from studying the way that these two creatures respond to storms. So when a storm comes, storms almost always start in the west, you know, over the Rocky Mountains, and they roll out towards the east, towards the great, you know, Kansas Plains. And what cows do is very natural. cows can sense that a storm is coming from the west, and so they'll try to run away from the storm. So they will run east away from the mountains. Well, the only thing about that is that if you know anything about cows, you know they're not real fast. And so the storm catches up with them quite quickly. And as instead of stopping, the cows, without knowing any better, continue to try to outrun the storm. But instead of outrunning the storm, they actually run with the storm.
Staying in the storm.
Maximizing the amount of pain and time and frustration they experience from that storm, which is stupid, right? And yet humans do the same thing all the time. We spend so much of our lives constantly trying to avoid the inevitable challenges that come along with the circumstances that our very own choices have led us to be in. People who are in debt constantly try to find ways around paying their bills. You know, they try to consolidate this and consolidate that, and they try to avoid the real deal. People who are unhealthy constantly make rationalizations for why it doesn't matter. People who are struggling in their marriage, they avoid having those difficult conversations. Well, the big insight that the ultra performers had made and that a real entree leader understands is that problems procrastinated on are only amplified. So, in other words, waiting always makes it worse. What buffalo do is really unique in the animal kingdom. Buffalo will wait for the storm to cross right over the crest of the peak of the mountaintop. And as the storm rolls over the ridge, buffalo, instead of running east away from the storm, buffalo will turn and run west at the mountains. They run into the storm. But by running into the storm, they run straight through it as the storm passes over them, which minimizes the amount of pain and time and frustration, you know, they experience from the storm. Well, it's such a great metaphor for business and for life, because all of us are dealing with the same storms, and we don't get to choose whether or not we have storms. The only choice that we have is how we respond to those storms, and more specifically, when we respond to those storms. And leaders, you know, our job as the leader is to set the tone that we're going to have a culture and that we're going to be the kind of person that runs directly at the storms, that gets right in the middle of the negative situations and deals with whatever it is, the unhappy customers, the difficult decisions that need to be made. Because when we don't, the great paradox again is waiting makes it worse. And so sacrifices in general aren't really sacrifices at all. They're just short-term down payments on these rich future blessings.
Gosh, it's crazy the difference. I think everybody listening right now, hopefully everybody listening right now can absolutely understand both aspects, because I know for me, I've done both.
Mm-hmm.
I know early on,
me too.
Early on in life, man, I would try and outrun those bad boys and just get stuck in it, staying in it, keep myself in it. And then finally, I would get to a point where I just get so mad, I'd charge the other direction.
Totally.
And every single time, yes, maybe it hurts a little more. Yes, maybe, you know, the storm is right in your face. But it's so much better getting through it faster and getting things done. Well, we've got just a couple minutes left, so two final thoughts. One, what is the one thing you would tell, if you were able to go back in time, what is the one thing you would tell the 21-year-old Rory? And what is the one thing that you want every leader to learn or every leader to hear right now?
Wow. Well, 21-year-old Rory, that wasn't that long ago, so.
That's just a couple weeks ago.
if there was one thing I could really go back and help myself understand, I think it would be this. It would be to understand that, you know, your attitude really is a key determinant in your success, and that one of the most important skills a young person can learn, and this is what Southwestern Advantage does so brilliantly, is we're knocking on doors. We learned this. I didn't realize it at the time, but you learn that your attitude can always be independent of your circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And attitude is something people get confused a lot, and I never understood attitude until one time I was in Jamaica, and I was on vacation, and I was supposed to be, you know, supposed to be our vacation, and it was raining, and I was all upset, right? And this Jamaican cab driver, I was being sort of flippant to him, and I was like, geez, you know, Cabby, what's with all the rain, man? It's supposed to be my vacation. It's supposed to be sunny. It's raining, you know. Is it going to rain all week? And he said to me, he goes, you know, in Jamaica, man, we don't have rain. We only have liquid sunshine, man. And when he said it, Chris, you know, I'd listened to Zig Ziglar. I'd read all these books. But there was something about this Jamaican cab driver. And when he said it hit me. Attitude is not fluffy. It's not motivational or whatever. It's very pragmatic. Attitude is the way you choose to see things. And you can choose to see it as rain, or you can choose to see it as liquid sunshine. What you do not get a choice over is whether or not those drops fall from the sky. But you can always have an attitude that you choose your attitude regardless of your circumstances. And I always felt like my attitude was connected to what was happening. And if things were good, I had a good attitude. If things were bad, I had a bad attitude. And you know, when you, as an entree leader, if you focus on controlling what you can control and having a good attitude in the process, it's like things always work out. So, you know, leading into the one thing that I would want every single leader to know, and this is something I remind myself of, it's something that I remind our team of, our leaders, is you always get paid for how hard you work. Sometimes now, oftentimes later, but always eventually. Mm-hmm. And you always get paid for the tough choices, for the sacrifices you make, for the attitude that you choose to have, for the pain that you endure, for the risks that you take, for the work. You always get paid for the emotional and physical and mental work you put in, sometimes now, oftentimes later, but always eventually. That would be the one thing I'd want every leader to know. It's worth it.
Brother, that is good stuff. That is good stuff. Well, how can people get the book, and how can people get more of you?
Sure. Well, probably the easiest place to go is just roryvaden.com. They can, you know, find me on Twitter. They, you know, so if you go to roryvaden.com, you can find the book and Take the Stairs and read the blog, and also get connected to Southwestern Consulting if you're, you know, into sales and that kind of stuff. So roryvaden.com would be the easy place to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you, brother, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And, you know, hey, success is never owned. It's rented, and the rent is due every day. So I'll see you in the stairwell, right?
Absolutely. Can you stick around for the extended interview?
Yeah, you got it.
Sounds good. Well, I got to say, I love that interview. I loved that interview because there was so much meat in there, and there's so much more. It just really makes you understand how important it is to get the book. So what'd you get out of that, Becky?
Yeah, there was a lot of meat, but there was also a lot of tweetable moments.
There's a ton of tweetable moments.
Just so many like sound bites that I'm going to go back and stick on a post-it note by my computer and remember. And one of the coolest ones that I heard was attitude is independent of your circumstances. And
oh,
just
my gosh,
applying that, you know. Just so much there. So
yeah, I love the part where, you know, the rent axiom, success is never owned. You don't own success. You don't, even when you get success, when you have success, it doesn't mean that you've just not, well, it's, you know, it's mine. Mm-hmm. It's good. I've got it. It's just rented. Every single day, you got to pay the rent on success. And if you're not willing to do it, then don't complain about why you're not successful.
Yeah.
If you want to be successful, pay your rent. Pay your rent, you can be successful. There's some tweetable moments in there somewhere,
go.
Right? All right, folks. Well, we hope that you enjoyed that. That was a blast for us. Announcements coming up this Thursday at 9 a.m. We will be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Start your workday with an hour discussion, discussing your challenges and questions with members of Dave's business coaching team. Did we mention that it is completely free? Yep. There is no charge whatsoever. Visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership this Thursday and take your leadership to the next level. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at EntreeLeadership or email us at podcast@EntreeLeadership.com. Don't forget to head over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for our monthly newsletter. It is also free. If you want to hear all the Entree Leadership lessons from Dave, attend our next Entree Leadership Master Series event May 5th through the 11th here in Nashville at our headquarters. We are hosting the event here at our offices to give you a front row seat to experience the Entree Leadership culture in action where it all began, right here. At this event, Dave will not only teach you how to take your business to the next level, but he will also personally interact with you over the course of the week-long event. So you get to spend time with Dave, the man himself. The event is limited to 150 people and always sells out quickly. So for more information on the Entree Leadership events, visit daveramsey.com/entreeleadership or call the Entree Leadership team at 888-227-3223. Well, folks, that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books, and I got to say, it was a good one. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was excellent.
Becky enjoyed it, Collins.
It's going to go down in podcast history.
Down in podcast history? Yes, it will.
Yeah.
Because it's on iTunes.
That's so right. It's good one.
So, folks, got to thank the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our executive producer. Colin Fatke, our audio engineer and genius and all the great stuff. And quite a handsome, dapper man. Let me just say that, by the way. Becky Powell, our queen of these stairs. No.
I was going to say Stairmaster. What do you like that? Do you like that one?
Becky Powell, our Stairmaster. I love that. Oh, that is fantastic. Rory Vaden, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Take this information out there, change your business, change your leadership, and change your life. And join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.